What is up, you guys? Welcome back to the Fast and Flow podcast. I'm your host, Fast and Flow, otherwise known as Catherine Kelly, your running bestie, a New York City-based long-distance runner and certified personal trainer and soon-to-be certified running coach. And I also work in corporate strategy at a fitness company, so we are all things fitness over here. Today, I want to talk about fueling as an endurance athlete, and I have touched on this before in a previous podcast. I've talked about this a lot on my social medias, but the more I talk about it, the more I actually realize how important it is to continue talking about it, because it's just one of those things that, honestly, in my opinion, cannot be stressed enough, because there are so many people that struggle with their relationship with food. And especially as athletes, female athletes in particular, I've experienced it by myself. I've seen other people go through it and are continuing to go through it. And it honestly breaks my heart, because I think a lot of people cap their own potential because they don't give themselves the proper food. Literally, it's that simple. They don't eat enough, and so they can't reach their potential. It's not even more complicated than that. Well, I mean, like, emotionally and mentally, it is more complicated than that. It's like truly something that probably has to be worked through in therapy. And I spent a long time, probably 3 years, just working through my relationship with food and my relationship with my body in therapy. And it's amazing that I can sit here now and talk to you guys and say, like, I can truly talk from a standpoint where I just genuinely don't have a negative relationship with food or my body anymore. Like, it'll never be fully perfect. Like, I'm never going to sit here and say it's 100% perfect. Like, there'll always be those little things that creep in, like, oh, I wish I looked like this, or like, oh, I probably shouldn't eat that. But it's so far and few between at this point that it just, I don't even think about it, which is crazy, because when I was like really in a dark place, it would consume my mind. And I would think, how could I ever think about anything else? Like, how could I ever get through a day and not just constantly think about food the whole time, but like in a very negative way? Like, oh, like trying to not eat for as long as I could so I could eat a bigger dinner. And it's just like so toxic, and I would always feel horrible. But before we actually jump into all of that, because I just have so many thoughts on it and I want to keep talking about it, but I want to give you guys a little update. I actually podcasted on Thursday as well, so you guys are getting two podcasts this week. Well, I guess it's Monday, but it's a long weekend. It's Martin Luther King Day today, so I had off from work, which was really nice. Flew back from London yesterday, which it honestly feels like a longer time ago, but I've definitely been tired today, because basically when we landed, it was 2:15 a.m. London time, and then the clock obviously switched to 9:15 p.m. New York time. And then I had to get back from JFK, which always takes a while, like getting through customs was actually really quick. I posted this on my story yesterday, but it was quite shocking. I was going and I was like looking at the customs line. I was like, oh my God, that's so long. This is going to take 2 hours. Coming back from Italy last year, we were in the line for 2 hours because Brett didn't have global entry. He's setting up global entry in March because we're going to Europe for our honeymoon. We're going to France and Switzerland, and I'm like not waiting in a 2 hour line when we get back to New York. So either he's going to get it or I'm leaving him behind, because I stayed with him for Italy and I told him he's got one shot at that. But I was like, I know I updated my global entry. We had done it as a family when we were younger, so we went with my mom to do it. And then my mom had sent me an email last year, a year or two ago, that was like, your global entry is expiring, like you need to update it. And I was like, absolutely, I'm hopping on that right away. I don't care if I have to go back to the airport to do the whole screening, like I need global entry. And I was like, okay, I'm pretty sure I updated it, but I'm looking through my email. And at this point, I'm delirious. Like, I just got off the flight. The flight from London coming back is way longer than going there. So it was like almost 8 hours, and I was just so tired. And I'm looking through my emails, and I can't find any confirmation of me updating it or like renewing it. I can't find my number. I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to see what happens. And if they're like, no, you have to go wait in the customs line, then I'll wait in the customs line. But I might as well try. So I walk up to the machines, and how the machines used to be is you would scan your passport and you had to answer like 5 questions, or you could do it on the flight before you got there. Like if you had the mobile passport app, you could like answer 5 questions about if you were declaring anything and yada, yada. But I didn't do that. And I was like trying to look for that app. And then it was telling me I had to like re-download another app. And I was like, you know what? Let me just go up to the machine. So I go up to the machine and I'm trying to scan my passport. And it's not letting me scan anything. And then I read it and it says, just look into the camera. I'm like, okay. Thinking it's going to be something like I have clear as well. So like you have to scan your eyes. And then a lot of times you have to scan your boarding pass too. And there's like multiple steps. So it says, look into the camera. So I look into the camera and then it says, proceed. I'm like, proceed to what? Proceed to scan my passport? Proceed to answer a questionnaire? Or you mean like proceed into the country? Like, what does this mean? Very unclear. So I go up to three different machines, scan my face three times. I am like waltzing around this place, but I can tell other people are confused too. I'm like trying to look at what they're doing. And then they're probably like, why is this girl like looking at like my passport? Like, I don't even know what was going on. So eventually I'm like, okay, I guess I'm just going to walk up to the security guard who was like standing at the like border of the customs security. And so I walk up to the line, and there's no one, like, if there's only a few people around me, I mean, people are speeding through the global entry. So I'm like, okay, this is going to be really embarrassing if he tells me to turn around. And like, these people are like, oh, okay, whatever. No one was actually doing that, but I was just like, oh, this is going to be embarrassing if it doesn't work. So I roll up. He's like, what's your name? I say, Catherine Kelly. And he's like, okay, go. And I'm like, go through. So I just start walking. Cause you know, sometimes like if an officer or like some security is telling you what to do and you're acting confused, then they get mad. And so I'm like, okay. So I just start walking, and I just walked out of the airport. And that was literally it. Like, all you had to do was look at the camera and then walk out of the airport. It was the easiest, fastest thing I've ever done. Then I posted on my story. I'm like, is this new technology? And someone was like, I don't think it's new, but I guess I haven't traveled abroad since last year. And then, as I said, when we came back from Italy, I had to wait in the normal customs line like a plebeian. I'm just kidding. But seriously, if you can get global entry, I would get global entry. It saves hours. I don't travel out of the country a ton, but I am going to be traveling more now just because my best friend did move to London. So I just don't want it to be hard going back and forth. So that was awesome. That was like a win of the night. I was sliding through security and then just waltzed right out of the airport, got myself a diet. What was it? A diet Dr. Pepper and an RX bar. I had so much soda yesterday. I needed to lock it back in today. When I travel, I'm somebody who, like, when I travel, I do not stick to it, to anything. Like, very hard for me to stick to any type of routine, nor do I really want to. The routine that I do stick to is I always, like, will move my body. I'll always get out and go for a run, go for a walk, like, especially just to explore a new city. I always do that. That doesn't even really feel like a routine to me. Like, that's just what I want to do. But definitely with, like, my sleeping schedule, my eating schedule, I was eating at all random hours of the day. Lord knows, because of the time changes too. I ate a roast for breakfast, like very heavy breakfast. I was just literally all out of whack. But I just think that's honestly so fun when you're traveling, because you don't have to like worry about your routine coming back for you. Like, your routine's going to be there when you get back. That's why it's called a routine. I say that all the time. I also did post this on my story, but I did eat sugar basically the entire time I was in London. And I was going to try to not eat like refined sugar in January. And I did it for like 11 days, which is pretty long. And it just made me realize that I do love sugar, but I also don't feel good when I eat sugar in the morning. That's what I realized. Like, when I eat sugar at night, it's honestly fine. I feel like because I've eaten so much other stuff that day, I don't really like feel like tired because of it. Or I guess maybe I'm already tired at night, so I don't notice. But there was a period of like 2 or 3 months over the like holidays and in the fall where I was getting syrup, like pumpkin syrup, or just like sugar cookie syrup in my coffee in the morning at like 9 a.m. because it literally tastes so good. But it would make me more tired when I drank it. And I didn't like that. So I realized sugar at night, good for me. Sugar in the morning, not so good for me. Like, sugar after I run, good for me. Sugar in the morning when I'm trying to work and focus, not so good for me. So I feel like it has been a good exercise just to see like the different times that it affects me, and definitely the quantity, right? Like, so if I just have a scoop of ice cream, it's fine. But I'm somebody who, like, I'll have a pint of ice cream and I'll be like, my stomach really hurts. Cause that's for me too. Like, I don't have a very good GI system. I easily get bloated, and I'm still working through that. I've gone to so many GI doctors, and then they're like, you have IBS. What's IBS? Irritable bowel syndrome. What does that mean? It's literally just a blanket statement for you don't have good digestion. Then I found out I had SIBO, got rid of that, had to take antibiotics and then do a whole herbal supplement thing. And then I stopped eating cruciferous vegetables for the most part. Tonight I ate broccoli and my stomach hurts so much, but I do love roasted broccoli. I made it really roasted, put a lot of olive oil and salt on that. Oh my God, it's literally so good. But for the most part, I do stay away from cruciferous vegetables, which are like broccoli, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts, even like cabbage and stuff, like, because it just makes me very gassy, just to put it bluntly. Not so good. So not so good when I'm at a restaurant or I'm out. If I'm home, you know, we can take the risk. I don't know how happy Brett is about that, but we can take the risk. He's not very happy tonight, but that's okay. Anyway, but I'm back in New York. I ran with one of my followers this morning, Jess, and it was so much fun. She's actually running the Miami Half Marathon in 2 weeks, and we were doing an easy-ish run, or I guess I was doing an easy run, and then we were talking, so we kind of started speeding up a little bit and ended up kind of going to her tempo pace. She's trying to aim for around a two-hour half marathon, so around a nine-minute pace. And so we were running around a nine-minute pace, and we did a full loop of the park, so we ran up Harlem Hill. She was like, I'm like, oh, we're doing a full loop. She's like, so we're running up Harlem Hill. I'm like, frick yeah, we're running up Harlem Hill. You think you're running with me and not running up Harlem Hill? You got to get out of here. So anyway, no, she was so happy. She was like, okay, fine, let's do it. So we get to the top of Harlem Hill and then we're cruising down and she turns to me. She's like, just so you know, I've never just made it up Harlem Hill that easily at that pace, like never in my life. And I feel so good right now. I never would have done that if you hadn't been talking and distracting me and running with me. And that's honestly how I feel when I take Peloton classes. I'm like, I get so distracted. Bex Gentry can take the littlest story and turn it into 30 minutes and then you're done with the class. So I'm practicing to be a Peloton instructor. No, that would literally be the coolest career of a lifetime. I've thought that for like, I've been doing Bex Gentry for, how old am I now? Probably 6 or 7 years, I want to say. I've been taking her basically since she joined the Peloton platform. She was the first instructor I ever fell in love with. And she's just amazing. So anyway, we were talking, we were chatting, finished the run. It was great. I felt like I was a little bit off this morning. I feel like waking up the day after traveling, especially when you get in late at night, you're never fully settled. So I'm so happy that MLK Day was today. I actually didn't even know when I booked this trip that I was going to have off on the Monday. And then I realized late last week, like as I was going to London, and I was so happy about that. So it was actually a nice little vacation over the Christmas break. Like I did have off a week from work. Basically my whole company had off. Which was really nice. But I was in Ohio the whole time. So we were with Brett's family and his mom is one of 11 siblings. So there's always people coming over from all different sides of the family. We were doing a lot of wedding planning. My mom flew to Ohio. So it was kind of like, it was not working, but it was a lot of just like being on, having conversations, like going to different places, planning stuff. And it was just, I didn't feel like super rested after that, if that makes sense, even though I wasn't working. So London was honestly so nice just to be with my best friend. It was so calming. Like I've been to London before and I've done all of the like Houses of Parliament and Big Ben and like the River Thames and all that stuff. So I didn't feel the need to do it this time. And I know I'm going to go back with Brett again, probably later this year or next year. And we'll get to do all that stuff again because he's never been to London. So honestly, my objective for this trip and anytime I go on a vacation, I will journal out what my objectives are. I'm such a journaler. Like it kind of sounds annoying because I used to get so annoyed at people that would be like, I journal every day. But it to me is one of those things that like, if I don't do it, I crave it. If I forget to journal all day, I'll be craving it all day and I'll do it before I go to bed. Normally I do it in the morning. But it's like that for me has been easy. That was one of the easy things for me to implement. Just fell so nicely into my life. The hard things have been meditation for me. Like no matter where I try, it never feels like so seamless into my life. And maybe that's okay. Like maybe journaling is my form of meditation and my form of kind of like being cathartic and just putting things out on the paper and getting them out of my head. That's how I feel. It's like getting things written down takes them out of my head. So it takes the burden of me constantly thinking about them off. Cause now it's like on the page, if that makes sense. So on the plane, I journaled like that. I just wanted to spend time with Sarah, slow down, don't book ourselves too much, just like go for walks, go to dinner, walk around the market, like stuff like that. And that's exactly what we did. I'm also so happy because I met Liz, newcomer at Resiliency and Running, and we recorded a podcast together that actually comes out on Friday. So look out for that. I'll drop the link on my story when that comes out. But if you don't follow Liz, she is literally doing it all, like quite literally. I don't understand how she does it. Maybe that's how people feel about me too. But when you see somebody who's just going after their dreams and what they believe in, it lights a fire under your ass like nothing else. Like I came home from London and was just like, that's honestly why I'm recording again right now, because I feel so passionate about long form content. My goal has always been to do long form content. I really want to do YouTube full time at some point if I can. I just think I would enjoy that so much, and like the process of being able to film more of my life, so you guys can get to know me more and so that I can provide more value. But that's what's really drawing me back to the podcast. I'm like, it's so hard to get your point across on social media, like on TikTok or Instagram. And I'm so like grateful that I have those mediums that I can quickly just post something on my story or post, you know, a reel or a video and just, you know, share what I'm feeling in that moment or share my training like every day. But it is nice to be able to sit down and discuss longer form topics. And I feel like I've never felt as close of a community as I have from the podcast. And I'm trying to figure out like how to get even closer of a community and like around the podcast, and like maybe I start just a podcast Instagram. I don't know. I'm brainstorming all of these things. As I said, I took some time at the end of 2023 to really think about what I want to do going into the new year and what I really want to focus on this year. And I feel like there's a lots of ups and downs, but I do really think long form content is where I want to be headed. So, you know, I think Instagram is always going to be something that I do just because it's like right there in the moment, super timely and relevant. And I love that. And I love being able to connect with you guys like that. But the more people that I meet in person, and like, for example, meeting Liz this weekend, going on a run with Jess this morning, I'm really trying to like followers that have reached out to me and like want to go on a run with me or want me to coach them later on this year. That to me is so much more important than like anything I do on the screen. The screen to me is just like the screen being social media and the internet. That's just a way for me to facilitate the things that I actually want to do, if that makes sense. And it's also a really great way and a free way to reach so many people who have similar goals and interests and who I can like hopefully motivate and inspire and educate, because I'm learning so much through my own training, through my running certification, through life that I just want to share. And I've always been compelled to share. And sometimes I'm like, oh, maybe I just shouldn't do social media. Like maybe it would just be easier to just, you know, just do my job and have a lot of time to myself and be able to just like read and travel and do whatever. It's like, but no matter what I was doing, I would feel compelled to share. That's the thing. Even if it wasn't running, even if it was like being a mom or like, I don't know, even just like working in the corporate world or like having a dog or, you know, whatever it was, like I want to share it. Like I just feel very compelled to share, and I've always felt very compelled to share. So it's like really cool that I can just sit here and talk into my phone quite literally. First of all, we're going to have to get myself a nicer setup for sure. But the thing is, like I'm a little bit scrappy. I feel like, and I want things to feel fun. And sometimes I think, oh, if I had a really like proper setup, it would feel just like so much work to me. Whereas like right now I can just sit in my bed and record. But at some point, maybe when we move to like a bigger apartment or something, it's just like there's really no room in here. We have a couch and then we have a bed. So like there are two separate rooms. It's a one bedroom apartment. It's not a studio, but there's not a ton of room to set up a podcasting space. So for now we're recording on the phone and it works. Okay, cool. So after an 18-minute life update, like clearly she's feeling chatty today, clearly. I feel like I could just keep talking about random stuff right now, but I actually do want to touch at least for several minutes on the topic of fueling myself as an endurance athlete, because again, the more I talk about this, the more I realize it just needs to keep on being talked about. And this is not like, oh, you just say something one time and you can just fix the way that you've been like having a disordered eating pattern or a disordered body image. And I think here's the thing. I think when people haven't been like officially diagnosed with a problem, they don't think that they are allowed to talk about their problem or feel like they're able to like voice their opinion on something or feel validated in talking about something. And so I feel this way, honestly, sometimes when I talk about anxiety, I'm like, I don't have a clinical diagnosis for anxiety. I'm not on like Lexapro or anxiety medication. I also feel the same way when I talk about OCD, and I don't talk about that lightly. Like when I was younger, like 11 years old, I think 11 or 12, my mom took me to a psychiatrist because I was having like really bad OCD tendencies. Like I was displaying really bad tendencies at a very young age, and I still deal with all of that today. But again, I'm not like officially diagnosed, but that is something that I don't take lightly. Not like, oh, like I just feel super OCD. Like I needed like you know, the sheets to be clean. Like, that is not what it's like for me. It's honestly, I can't even explain it. It doesn't make sense. And I've tried to explain it to Brett before, and he's just kind of like very supportive, but it just is not something I can explain. But similarly with an eating disorder, I was never officially diagnosed with an eating disorder. But I can for sure tell you like what I was doing for probably 6 to 7 years of my life was very disordered eating. So even if it wasn't diagnosed, and I think that's the thing too, you can kind of, or like I could try to justify to myself that I didn't have a problem because I didn't have a diagnosis. And I don't think you need to wait for the medical system to diagnose you to like get better, if that makes sense. So again, I've touched on all of this before, like none of this is information is perfectly new, but I feel like every time I've talked about it, I've like held back a little bit. And I just wanted to kind of talk about just running and eating disorders again more openly, just because A, I think a lot of people deal with it. And I want you to know that you are not alone at all. And honestly, even if you're not seeking out professional help, which I think is a great thing to do, but just telling other people that you're struggling, like confiding in your friend that you're struggling, or confiding in your, you know, mom or whoever you can trust, makes it feel less scary. Because when things are living in your head, it's just so scary, and you feel like you're the only one who feels that way and the only one who can understand it, and you're not. That goes for anything, like anxiety, even just like telling somebody that you're feeling really anxious, like I'll tell Brett, and like just knowing that he knows and is going to make me feel better makes me already feel better. So just knowing that you're not crazy, and B, knowing that you can get better and it doesn't always have to be that way. And again, if you told me this 5 years ago, I would have not believed you. And honestly, the first person who I really saw talking about their relationship with having an eating disorder and then like truly getting over it and being like, it actually never had anything to do with the food. It had to do with like my confidence and the way that I viewed myself and the way that I spoke to myself and the way that I didn't love myself. It wasn't about the food. The food was just the manifestation of all those other things, was actually Melissa Wood. And that was the first time that I really started thinking, okay, yeah, maybe food is just the way that like I display my issues with all of these other things. But food can't possibly be the problem, because food is necessary to keep you alive. So food is not the problem. The way that I think about food is the problem. And a thought can be changed. A thought is just a thought, and a thought can be changed. And that concept is from Louise Hay. I read the book, You Can Heal Your Life, and that honestly completely changed my life. Like, if I can pinpoint one point in my life that completely changed my relationship with food and my relationship with my body, my relationship for being able to forgive myself, forgive my parents, to like know that everyone is just a person and everyone can learn to love themselves because we are all perfect. That all came from Louise Hay. And I'm telling you, I read that book in a couple weeks and it literally changed my life. And now every single morning I read a passage from a book called Trust Life, which is a compilation of 366 passages from different books that Louise Hay has written. And you just read one passage every single morning. It takes 30 seconds. And then I journal for 5 minutes after that. So literally, that's, I make my latte, I sit down on the couch, I read that passage, and I journal for 5 minutes. That whole thing there takes 10 minutes, but it makes me so happy. I love having a latte in the morning. I'll make myself a decaf latte in the morning with a little bit of cashew milk. It is so, so good. But anyway, I think that like, yeah. So once I started realizing that it wasn't actually the food that was the problem, that's really when things started to change. But where things started to get bad is like, if I can think back to high school, I never thought about what I was eating in a good way. Like, my parents were always very healthy, but in a way that like was not restrictive. And I feel like that is one of the things that they did very, very well for us growing up. And I want to emulate that with our children when we have them. But they kind of taught us from an early age that like what we're having as a family is what we're eating. Like, there's no special kids meal. If we're having chicken and rice and broccoli, we're all having chicken and rice and broccoli. Like, the kids aren't having mac and cheese and pizza. We're all eating vegetables, fruits, carbs, proteins, and I don't even remember exactly how they explained to us or if they even ever told us why we need to eat chicken. I'm sure when you're little, it's just like chicken meat makes you strong, like rice makes you fast, like whatever it was. Avocados make you smart. Like, I don't know what they told us, but they somehow got it across to us really, really well, that food was good and you should eat all this really good food. And we were kids who always brought our lunches to school. And I didn't really get this at the time, but my mom always used to be like, I get so frustrated with the school lunch system. And it's because, yeah, they're serving cookies, pizza, hot dogs. There's sugar in everything. They're letting you have soda. They're letting you have chocolate milk that has 50 grams of sugar in a little chocolate milk can. Like, we were only allowed to have chocolate milk on Fridays, and then we could have regular milk the rest of the week. So again, there was like balances, and we could have cookies on Friday, but regular milk the rest of the week. We could always have dessert, but like during the week, it was like either a little piece of chocolate, or we would have like yogurt and berries. And then maybe Friday and Saturday, we would have ice cream sundaes, and we didn't have soda in the house. But when we went out to dinner, we could have soda. So it was like this really nice little balance. And I still feel like I copy a little bit of that today. And again, like, I don't subscribe to the notion that, oh, you need to wait until Friday if you want to have ice cream. Like, if you want to have ice cream on a Wednesday, have ice cream on a freaking Wednesday. It doesn't really matter. But I think it's just knowing the balance and what feels good for your body and knowing what good food, good nutritious food feels like when you eat it. You feel so good and so vibrant and so healthy and alive, and you have so much energy. Like, when you're eating truly food that comes from the earth, fruits, vegetables, high quality lean proteins, carbohydrates, eating some good like pasta, potatoes, rice, like just quinoa, farro, nuts, seeds, legumes, like having huge big salads. My mom's always used to make big salads, and eating spinach when we were younger, and like eating carrots, and we would have celery and peanut butter and raisins, and we would call it ants on a log. We had a lot of cheese and crackers and like jam, and just always making sure we were eating good, eating a wide variety of foods, and like eating good quality foods. That was always really, really important. And like, we always had Oreos in the house, Cheez-Its, Goldfish. But the thing is, because we had all those things around, we didn't abuse them. We would just like have a snack and then be like, okay, cool, on to the next thing. Maybe I'll have an apple later, and then like then we'll have dinner. Like, it just was never a big deal. And so I never thought about food in a negative way, which is amazing. Even when we would go to other kids' houses, I remember like they would have, what would they have? Those Dunkaroos and like just kind of a lot of different snacks that we didn't have, but we never really want, like, I don't remember us ever really like wanting to binge on them. Like, we would have the snacks that they would have there. We went over after school and we were having a snack, but it was never something like, oh, we feel like we can never have this, so we're going to go crazy. Cause I know there are a lot of kids like that, like whose parents didn't let them have any sugar and were super restrictive. And again, like, no way is right or wrong. I personally think for me, the way that my parents raised me was amazing, in terms of like just educating us on what was like really good quality food, and that you have to eat enough, and you have to eat 3 meals a day, and you know, you need to be eating snacks throughout the day, and we were always very active. Anyway, so never had any problem going into high school, never any problem. Truly, through the time I graduated, never really thought about my body image. I didn't really have a concept of body image. I loved myself, truly. Like, I didn't really care what I looked like. I've always been athletic. I've always been very strong. There was actually one time, and this is interesting that it happened now that I'm thinking on this and I'm saying this. I think when things are kind of bad in your life, you tend to block them out or like black them out. But now I'm remembering it. This is interesting. I think I was in fifth grade, maybe even super, super young, 10 years old. And I remember thinking, oh, I'm like too big. I need to be really thin. And for about 6 to 9 months there, I actually had an issue with eating. And then I don't know, maybe my mom talked me through it, or I can't even remember, but I completely popped out of that. And that was before even middle school. Like, that was still in elementary school, and then never had a problem through middle school and high school, which is so interesting. But once I went to college, that's when this disordered eating pattern came back heavy. And this was, so I went to college, no problems. We were like first semester. I was still dating my boyfriend from high school. So that was very volatile. Like, it was not a good relationship. Like, don't get me wrong, it was fun. It was a high school relationship. But when we went to college, I feel like we were both kind of being a little bit possessive over each other. And like, he didn't want me to go out. And like, I honestly was probably doing things that I shouldn't have been doing when we were out, when I was out, but like, I knew that he was too. And like, we knew that it was going to end. I don't know why we were trying to make it work. You just don't know what you're doing when you're that young. But, anyway, it ended. Like, it was totally, it was honestly pretty amicable. Like, I had tried to break up with him and then we got back together and then he broke up with me. And for some reason, I think it's because he broke up with me, it felt like it was so out of my control that it took over my life. Like, this was now second semester. We came back from Christmas break. We had like decided, okay, once we get back from Christmas break, we're no longer going to be together. And that honestly sent me into a depression. Like, that was the most sad I've ever felt in my life. Like, nothing else in my life has ever felt that bad. And I think like probably losing your first love maybe just stings more than anything else that'll ever happen to you. But it was bad. And I was like, okay, I feel like everything's slipping out of my control. I was rushing a sorority at that point, didn't get any of the sororities that I wanted, so decided to drop out of the process. So I think I just like maybe then really started to be like, wait, all these other girls are like skinnier than me and prettier than me and have better clothes than me. And like, they all have boyfriends. And that's when the comparison really, really started heavy. And I just took to controlling my eating patterns as the way that I felt like I could best control what was going on, because I felt like everything else was spiraling out of control. So I started to really restrict what I was eating. I remember I like wouldn't eat breakfast. I would maybe like eat a bar for lunch, and then I would eat, I don't know, like a roll of sushi or something later in the day. And then maybe I would have like chicken and like vegetables or something for dinner. Like, it was, I was probably eating honestly 1200 to 1500 calories a day, if I could think. And I'm somebody who's always eaten like 3000 calories a day. I eat a lot of food. I've always eaten a lot of food, even when I wasn't marathon training. Like, ask my mom. She, like, I'm known as like the vacuum of the family. Literally, when we go out to dinner and people won't finish their food, I will be finishing everyone else's food. I've always been like that. And so it was like, I was probably eating like 1500 calories for me. It was probably like half of what I used to be eating. So I lost a ton of weight, and I never really lost a ton of fat, because I remember always kind of having, like, I was always self-conscious of fat that I had on my legs or fat that I had on my stomach. And this is just me being very candid with you guys. And I still had that even when I was really, really thin. I had just completely lost all my muscle. Like, it was scary. I had probably lost like 20 pounds, but it was of muscle. My legs were so weak. But again, it was like, it was so perplexing to me, because I thought, oh, if I just don't eat, like, I'll just be like really fit. I think that's what I thought. I thought I would look like an athlete. That is so backwards and so twisted. And I know that now, but that's really what I thought. And then that was the time that coincided with me starting to run, because I was like, needed to pour this energy into something that was useful and not just like laying in my bed. So I basically wouldn't eat all day, and then I would get up and I would run like 7 miles a day, and I would just like starve myself basically, and then do that again the next day. And I remember thinking too, like, oh, this is so normalized. Like, I hear other girls talking about this. Like, they work out, they try not to eat. And it was honestly just so, so normalized, which was not good. And I was obviously away from my family, away from my support system. And that was really, really hard. So again, not eating coinciding with the time I started running a lot, I signed up for a marathon, because I was like, you know what, I'm just going to run this marathon. This is going to be great. Another way to kind of control things. I bet I'll get really skinny through that. It'll be really good. Ugh, so bad. I can't even believe that was my mindset. But the worst part is too, I had people telling me like 3 or 4 months into this whole like disordered situation that was going on, they were like, you're looking really good. Like, you started to look really good and really fit towards the end of freshman year. And that just reinforced my negative behavior, which is so bad. Like, honestly, I don't think you should ever comment on someone's weight at all. Whether you think they look really thin or really heavy, or, you know, just that their weight changed a lot. Like, you just don't know what's going on. And I think, unfortunately, I've heard this one too many times, like from myself included, that when you start to lose a lot of weight, but not like, oh, you're gaining muscle mass and you're dropping fat and you're like doing it for some athletic pursuit. No, I'm talking about like literally atrophying muscle. And people are telling you that you look good and you look like the best you've ever looked. It's such a mind fuck, honestly. Like, it's really, really bad. And I just wish I could go back to that time and like just show myself what it could look like to be healthy and what it could feel like. Not even what it could look like. Literally, who even gives a shit what it could look like, what it could feel like to feel healthy and to go on a run and have energy. Like, I was throwing up on every run that I went on. It was so bad. I just had the worst acid reflux. I was so sick. I was honestly destroying my body, and it's really, really sad. And that's, you know, later that year, I ran my first New York Marathon in 2016, and I was so injured and I was so miserable, and I wasn't even proud of myself when I finished. And it honestly was one of the worst days, and that was really, really sad. So going forward, honestly, throughout my entire college career, like, I don't need to keep beating this to a pulp, but that basically was my mindset. Like, don't eat, work out, like, eat a little dinner, and then try to like starve yourself until the next day. And I would go to bed hungry and I would feel horrible. And I would like just sometimes have to get up in the middle of the night and make myself like toast because I couldn't even sleep because I would be so hungry from the day. And I would try to like see how long I could go before I ate, and I would have headaches and I would not be able to concentrate. And I like actually had severe anemia to the point that I had to get iron transfusions. And I've struggled with anemia on and off my whole adult life, but this was like super severe. I was so tired. I was sleeping 10 hours a night. My hair was getting super thin. It was like falling out. Yeah, I felt so, so weak and so depleted. And all that kept me going was me thinking like, oh my gosh, I just look really skinny. I just look really skinny and good. And this is good. And that is so sad. And that's basically how a lot of my college career went. And so once I started dating Brett, like once I graduated college and Brett and I started dating, I was working in the city. He honestly showed me such a healthy relationship with food. Like, he just had such a balanced diet and a balanced way of going about eating and working out. And he wasn't overtraining. He wasn't underfueling. He was just so healthy with it. And that honestly helped me so much to just see someone who obviously I was so close with, and we were dating, that had such a healthy relationship with food and with his body and with exercise. And over time, that really started to heal me. And I can't tell you one specific point of when I started to really switch my mind, but it was a combination of a few things. One, which was therapy. And this took like a long time for me to even bring up in therapy, because I think I was so like disappointed in myself about it. And I was so nervous to admit that I had a problem. And again, I think because I never had a clinical diagnosis, I didn't think I had a problem, right? And I didn't think it was even valid for me to talk about having an eating disorder, but I very blatantly did. And like, I'm not even going to label what it is, but, or what I think it was, but it just was an eating disorder, and it doesn't have to fall into a neat label. It was disordered eating. It was not proper. And I think therapy really, really helped me. And again, it took me a long time to open up about it. And then I had to talk through it for 3 years. But I eventually started to get to a really good place. And then this book, You Can Heal Your Life, tipped me over the edge and changed me forever. Like, I highly, highly recommend You Can Heal Your Life by Louise Hay. If you're struggling with body image, eating disorder, forgiveness, self-love, like any of that stuff, I highly, highly recommend it. It has truly changed my life. And yeah, I think just through a combination of all those things. And then after I stopped investment banking and I was working just in a corporate job, the job that I'm in now, and I was able to actually start training for races again, I just started to realize like I didn't have enough energy to train. And I had started to think about all these running goals again, and I just needed the energy to be able to do it. But again, when I first started like kind of ramping back up and running, I was still very much in a disordered mindset. And it took me a couple years to work through to get to a point where I was really fueling my body. But then I was kind of fueling my body against my own will. Like, I knew what to do, I knew what I needed to do, and I was doing it, but it was like painful for me to do because all I wanted to do was like fall back into the disordered eating pattern. But I kept fighting that again and again. And I do want you to know, like, it's okay. Again, a thought is just a thought. You don't have to listen to the thought. You can purposely go against the thought when you know that you are doing something good for yourself. So I was having disordered eating thoughts, but I wasn't giving them any credence. I wasn't giving into them. I was like, oh, I went out last night and I ate pizza late at night, and now I'm going to wake up and, okay, what I really want to do is I just want to not eat all day. I want to go run as many miles as I can run. I want to just like throw up my food that I ate last night, but I didn't do that. I got up, I made myself a coffee, a latte, I made myself a breakfast, maybe went out on a walk. Maybe I wouldn't even let myself work out that day. Maybe I wouldn't even let myself work out until that night, until I had eaten a couple meals. Like, I actively went against it. And this doesn't really happen to me much anymore, but I think a lot of it was also like when I was going out and then I would eat food late at night and then I would feel really guilty about it and I would feel guilty about how many calories I drank. And like, first of all, that whole thing is just so messed up. The fact that binge drinking is so normalized, it's not good. It's really not good. And it was, yeah, it was definitely taking a toll on my mental health as well. So add that on top of, you know, everything else that I was already experiencing. It was really, really not a good situation. But yeah, I kind of took control over my own mind. I took control over my own thoughts. And I said, you know what, I don't have to listen to you anymore. And again, this was a process. This took probably 3 years of me really committing to it. But one day you just realize and you're like, wait, I haven't thought about food all day. And it's like, wait, I really haven't thought about food all week. And you just kind of, you just pop out of it. It kind of happens without you realizing, but it is because I worked so hard on it for so many years that I got to a really good spot with it. And now I'm like at such a spot where I'm able to like tweak my diet if I want to gain muscle, tweak my diet if I'm trying to get really fast, like tweak my diet, like because I don't have any disordered tendencies associated with it anymore. Now I can actually like optimally get my diet to the way that I want to perform for athletics. But beforehand, it wasn't even worrying about that. I wasn't worried about like trying to have the optimal diet. I was just trying to worry about eating, just eating enough. Like that was my only goal. I didn't even care if I was eating cupcakes. I just needed to be eating. Like that's the point that I was at. And so yeah, it's really cool. It's really cool when you realize you can pop out of the other side. And again, it takes work and it takes you loving yourself, honestly. That's something that You Can Heal Your Life helped me with a lot. It was just so many affirmations around, I love myself. I am perfect, whole and complete, just as I am. Like the universe made me perfect. God made me perfect, whatever you believe in. But it was so much just concentrated on, don't worry about your outward appearance. Don't actually worry about anything else other than loving yourself. And when you love yourself, everything will fall in line. And I feel so, so passionate about that. But now coming to the point where I'm at today, it's just like, I want to be an advocate for people, especially women who like went through that, are going through that now, because I know so deep down in my core what it feels like. And I just don't want anyone to hamper their potential because they are not eating enough food. And runners need carbohydrates. Runners need protein. Runners need fats. Runners need a lot of food. Runners need to eat before runs, during runs if it's a long run, after runs. Runners need to eat way more calories than they think they do. I feel so strongly about this. And honestly, what really brought this to my attention was I tracked my macros and my calories for about 2 weeks. This was a while ago. And I had stayed away from tracking anything for so long because all I used to do was count in the back of my mind, how many calories is that, and trying to minimize calories. But I actually got to a point where I felt comfortable with being able to track something again. And it took me a long, long time to get to the point where I felt comfortable tracking something, because for years, tracking anything would have sent me back into a downward spiral. But I got to the point where I was like, I feel healthy enough mentally, physically, emotionally. I actually want to track to make sure that I'm eating enough carbohydrates, protein, fats, and calories. And so it was a very illuminating experience because I realized I definitely wasn't eating enough protein. That was a huge thing I realized. Like my diet, my balance was so out of whack, and I wasn't eating enough calories whatsoever. And it's funny because every time I used to restrict my calories, I actually really used to, and this is, again, this is for me personally, and I'm being very open and honest with you guys. When I used to try to restrict my calories as much as possible, I used to hold on to a lot of fat. Like that was definitely the highest fat percentage that my body has ever been when I was restricting calories the most, which intuitively actually makes sense because you can't keep on any muscle. So your body is honestly just feels like kind of doughy. That's how I always remember feeling. I'm like, why do I feel doughy? And I thought that by like restricting calories and running as much as possible, I would somehow be ripped. And I don't know why I thought that, because in order to be quote unquote ripped, you need to be eating a ton of calories. You need to be in a caloric surplus to build muscle. You need to be doing heavy resistance training, and you need to be eating a lot of protein, and you need to be eating often. And that was the complete opposite of what I was doing. And it's really crazy because last year, obviously, I was training for the marathon. I ran the marathon and I wasn't doing a lot of strength training during the marathon. I also wasn't as diligent with my protein as I would have liked. I wasn't, I just wasn't as dialed in as I would have liked to be, but eventually I got so close to the marathon that I was like, I'm not going to start strength training now because I don't want to mess anything up like 6 weeks out from the marathon. But I said, after the marathon is done, I'm going to go into my season of strength. And you guys have seen me posting about that. And I posted that I'm just a lifelong strength trainer now. And I am. I love it. I will train strength forever. It's so, so important as you get older, especially as females, to make sure that your bone density is high. Like strength training is not just for muscle. It's also for bone density. Like that's why when older people, if they just like trip, they'll literally break their hip because their bone density is so brittle. Like it's like porous, their bones, and it'll just crack. You don't want that. You also lose a ton of muscle. Like by the time you're 80 as a female, you lose 50% of your muscle, which is so scary. But you can keep up strength training and you can keep up heavy resistance training and you can offset a lot of that. And it's going to just help you just live so much longer pain-free and be able to move around freely. I hope I can be a great grandma and be running around and playing with my great grandchildren. Like that would bring me the utmost joy in the world. And I hope I can run as long as I possibly can. I hope I can run to my final day on this earth, like seriously. And the only way that's going to happen is through strength training. And so actually in the past, I guess, what has it really been? 3 months since the marathon, I have eaten a lot more protein and strength trained 2 to 3 times a week with much heavier resistance than I've ever been used to. Again, none of this is heavy. Like I may be picking up 25-pound dumbbells, but I think it's more just the consistency of it and the fact that I wasn't strength training before, coupled with the fact that I'm eating a lot of protein. Like I personally target around 120 grams of protein a day. That just feels very like attainable to me and something that I can hit day over day without trying too hard. But again, I did have to track my macros at one point to understand that I was not eating enough protein and then kind of really pay attention to nutrition labels and what had good quality protein and what I could be adding in for breakfast. I wasn't eating any protein at breakfast. Now I start the day with like a Greek yogurt or eggs and turkey bacon, like just something that has a lot of protein so I can already start off my day on the right foot and then get protein throughout the entire day instead of waiting for just dinner. And then for lunch, I'll have like turkey and cheese, turkey and provolone wraps, and I'll have a chomps for a snack. And then I'll have I just make sure I'm having protein throughout the entire day instead of waiting until just dinner and then maybe having like some chicken with dinner and I get 40 grams of protein, but that was it for the whole day. And I'll obviously have like an RX bar or some type of protein bar too, but I'm really trying to keep it really clean. I've really been focused on like things that have gums and fillers and additives and like natural, quote unquote, natural flavors, which are actually chemicals. Carrageenan and just like xylitol and xanthan gum. And I'm not saying I avoid those things. I probably end up consuming some of that every single day, but like vegetable oils, seed oils, like I'm just trying to be way more conscious of that and not eat inflammatory foods. Like I don't want to eat inflammatory foods. When you eat inflammatory foods, like inflammation is not inherently a bad thing. Acute inflammation is necessary. That's when like you get a cut or you get a bruise and that area gets swelled up. That's just because your body is sending like immune fighter cells to go and like heal that part of your body. You need that inflammation. But what people are talking about when they talk about inflammatory foods is chronic inflammation. And chronic inflammation, it's like basically your body attacks itself. It attacks like its own joints. In the case of like arthritis, your body is attacking its own joints. And then it's causing a lot of pain and swelling in your joints. And then you can't move. That is a result partially of eating like inflammatory foods and just having an inflammatory lifestyle. Like that's why when you hear people say anti-inflammatory, things like omega-3s that are found in salmon, that's obviously amazing. So there are things that you can like do that hurt you and that help you. And like, I just want to be more aware of those things. And I just realized I was drinking a lot of almond milk, for example, that just had 1,000,001 ingredients in it. Like, I feel like my rule of thumb is if you can't pronounce the ingredients, probably shouldn't be having that. And again, everything I do is like 80% of the time. I'm not somebody who's going to say, I'm not doing this or I'm always doing this. That just doesn't feel good to me. That's too restrictive. So again, it's just being aware and then being able to make the right decision for me in that time, in that exact moment. So that's really what it is. But I've started eating a lot of protein, started strength training a lot more. And actually I've been running way lower volumes for the past like 12 weeks. And I talked about this a couple times before, but I actually got a DEXA scan back in September. So it was like, this was like right before the marathon, just to see like kind of what my muscle mass was, what my, like my lean mass, my bone density, my body fat, in all the different regions of my body. And then cause I knew I was going to start strength training. I was like, I just want to see what I'm at beforehand. Now I'm going to start strength training, going to start eating a lot of protein, and let's see where I am in like 5 to 6 months. So I think I'm going to test again in March, which will probably have been like 4 months of me doing resistance training and eating a lot of protein. So call it 16 weeks. And I kind of want to see, and I haven't like changed my caloric intake. I actually think I've been eating more calories. I've been hungrier than I've ever been. And my speculation is because I'm building more muscle mass, and muscle burns more calories at rest. Like your resting metabolic rate's just going to be higher the more muscle you have, which is another great reason to strength train. I love eating food, but definitely if I feel at least like I've been eating more, or I've just been more hungry than I was when I was deep into marathon training, which is really interesting. It might just be because my body is maybe at more of like kind of a homeostasis and equilibrium rather than being like in such a high cortisol environment all the time. Like when I'm heavy in marathon training, that's why I can't do that all the time. Like I'm training for one marathon this year and that's it, because I just can't. I am running New York, but I'm not racing it. I'm just pacing one of my friends. It'll be like a party pace for me, but Chicago is my goal race. And I just always want to be careful not to like put too much racing on my schedule. Half marathons I can get away with doing more of, but like the full marathon for me, I like really put everything into it. So I just always want to be careful to not stress my body out too much. Obviously you do need to overreach in order to realize fitness gains. So you do kind of need to stress your body out too much and then let it rest, and then stress your body out too much and then let it rest. Like that's kind of how you keep progressing. But you always just want to make sure not to really overreach to the point that like you can't recover again quickly. So yeah, gonna be sharing a lot more about that as I learn about it in my running certification, but that has been so amazing. It's called UESCA for anyone who is interested. 709 page textbook. So we are working our way through it. We're learning a lot. Highly recommend. It's the most extensive running certification I've found. So I'm really excited about it. More knowledge is always better in my opinion. But anyway, it's interesting because the body that I always wanted, which was like, you know, super lean, like muscular, lean, athletic, I thought that I would achieve that by restricting my calories and doing copious amounts of cardio. But it's funny that it's actually the exact opposite. It's actually eating more calories, eating more protein, and doing more strength training that gets that nice, like lean, athletic build. Which for me, like, I think having aesthetic goals is not a bad thing at all. I just think you have to kind of know where you're personally at. So like 5 years ago, having an aesthetic goal, only was a negative for me because I just wanted to be skinny. And that's not, in my opinion, a good aesthetic goal, just because it doesn't align with like being an actual healthy individual. Like you need to have muscle mass in order to be healthy and have longevity in your life. And be like just happy all around, and you need to be eating enough calories. But yeah, it just is interesting that it was the complete opposite of what I was doing for years and years, like just chasing it and hoping that just if I just ate less and less, like I would get what I wanted. And I actually always ended up trending in the other direction, which yeah, it's just so funny that I just think it's like if something hasn't been working for you for years and years and years, instead of trying harder and trying to do the same thing again, like maybe take a step back and try the complete opposite or try something completely different. Just try it. If something hasn't been working for years for you, just try something new for 8 weeks and see what happens. And I'm such a proponent of just like eating as much as you can as an endurance runner, because your body will use that fuel. Like I just think the more and more I eat, it's crazy because A, the better I perform, but B, the better I think I look the more I eat. Like the more I eat, my body just like looks better in my opinion, which again, like humans love aesthetics. So I think if you ask anyone, do you want to look good? They would say yes. So like, I'm not going to pretend like it's not like okay to talk about looking good. Like I like to look good too, but it's just funny that every time I tried to look good, I actually looked worse. And then when I tried to just perform well, I also looked good. Like the two go hand in hand. And just me loving myself made me just like look so much better and be like less puffy and just be more happy and more vibrant and just literally look better because I loved myself. So anyway, this is getting to be a really, really long episode. I was not planning on speaking this long. I thought it was only going to be 20 minutes, but again, just me opening the floor more and just sharing more about my journey with running and an eating disorder and running with an eating disorder. And I just want to keep sharing about this because it's so important. And I just want to be honest. Like, I don't want to sugarcoat things. I just want to tell you guys how it was for me and how it is for me. And I just hope that I can help people in that process. So anyway, I hope you guys enjoy this episode. Thank you for listening. If you listened all the way to the end, if you listened to the end, please DM me and let me know. I'm like, I don't know if anyone would listen this far. This is really long. I've never done anything longer than maybe 40 minutes was my longest episode. So thanks for listening to me for 55 minutes at this point. I think I'm going to start bringing guests on the podcast this year. So I definitely want to have Brett on as the first guest because I want to do an episode that's how did you know that he was the one, but I want him to be on as well. So I just need to figure out like the microphone situation because I think we would need a mic for that. I actually do have a mic, like a handheld mic, so that I can plug into my MacBook. And I think it's, I have something called like Audacity, I'm pretty sure it's called, that I can just record on instead of recording on my phone. So we could just pass the mic back and forth, which would be fine, I think, because then it would ensure that we never cut each other off since we would have to be speaking into the mic. So we'll see how that goes. But yeah, I'll figure something out. I do want to bring him on. So I definitely want to do that within, maybe we'll try to target doing that in February or maybe in January, maybe next weekend. Honestly, we'll see. I don't want to make too many promises, but we'll see what we can get him on board with. He definitely wants to come on. So he said I have to give him some media coaching. Not that I know what I'm doing. Like, I literally don't know what I'm doing, but that's the fun of it, honestly. So thank you guys for being here. Thank you guys for listening. Just remember to always fuel your body. Being overfueled is always better than being underfueled. So if you're questioning whether you should eat something, you should eat it. Okay. I love you guys and thank you for listening. And I hope everyone has a great week and I will talk to you in the next one. Bye.